Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill and Brandon Maslin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us today here on Get Yourself the Job. I'm Jennifer Hill, and you're joining us here for Get Yourself the Job with Brandon Maslin. And today we're going to have a special guest who we will introduce you to here in a moment. But before we do, we want to thank our sponsors who make today's show possible. The people over at Markham Search LLC offer premier professional recruiting services throughout the United States, including executive search options, payrolling options, and traditional temporary services. So please do keep them in mind for all of your needs. Now, without further ado, I'm going to hand it over to Brandon, who can tell you a little bit more personally about who our incredible and esteemed guest is today. Brandon?
You're always on point, because esteemed is a great word for Julie Colvin. Julie is, I hold her in high esteem, and I don't say that lightly. I've met many leaders over the tenure of my work, and Julie stands out even among the best of the best. And there's a variety of reasons we're going to talk about that, but the main focus of today's show, and one of the reasons I really did ask Julie to be on, is this idea of leading from the front. Stepping out in front of and being first and leading by example. And if you're going to ask anyone to do anything, you must ask it of yourself first. And I think Julie exemplifies that idea. And I'm going to share some stories over today's episode on what that's meant to me and what I've seen. Before we go there, I'm going to read her very impressive bio. Julie is the first chief information officer at Forescout Technologies, which, by the way, cybersecurity is not known for being cool or hip or whatever the kids are calling it these days. Forescout's as cool a culture as you get. Like, people there, just whatever they're doing, keep it up, because they're definitely a more modern, cooler culture. Not that FireEye wasn't, which is where I met Julie. And during her tenure at Forescout, she's built a digital and security strategy for the company. In 2018, couldn't think of a more perfect role for Julie to add into her chief information officer abilities than chief people officer, and focusing on building that very, it's not surprising to me that they have such an amazing culture when they choose a CPO like Julie to help them. After that, and I'm not going to get all these awards, but she's won numerous awards in Silicon Valley. And I might have her do them, but her most recent one was the Cybersecurity Women of the Year Award, which I just dig. It just sounds so cool. And a number of others that we could read on, but I don't want to embarrass Julie anymore.
Thank you.
Julie, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. I'm excited to be here. I thought I would have to wait in line for a long time to get on to your show, because you have impacted so many amazing women across the years that I've known you. So I know you have a long list of people that would probably love to support you and support other women in being successful.
That means a lot. You know, it's funny that you mentioned that. I do have a long list of people that I want to have on this show. When I made an announcement, I use LinkedIn the way most people use anything, social media, what have you. LinkedIn's where I kind of spend a lot of my time. And I posted that this is what I was doing. You were not only one of the very first people to respond, but you did it in such an emphatic way that I felt seen and supported. And that is really the reason that you were always going to be one of the first people on the show, is the way you've done that for me. And I think, and I've seen it, it's in your DNA that you do that for others. You see them, you make them feel seen. And I think that's such a rare gift. I think we just get so busy. We're in our own head. We're in our own space, that we forget that just seeing someone and focusing in. And so I appreciate it. So you were one of the, as so often the case, you were leading from the front. So I appreciate it. That's
now, it was my pleasure. I was really excited for you. This seems perfect, right up your alley. So I will do anything I can to support you.
You are amazing. And we're going to talk about what amazing support you are to others today. And I'm excited for you to get to know better Jennifer Hill, because she's been an amazing support to me as well. And I wouldn't be doing this without her launching this amazing podcast and asking me to co-host a couple weeks ago. Jennifer, I know Joey so well, so we're probably going to have this back and forth dialogue for a lot of the show, as you can tell. Why don't we start with any questions you might have? Why don't you kick us off today, please?
Perfect. I love it. So thank you so much, Julie, for joining us. As a fellow woman entrepreneur, I think that it's so important that we all lift one another up. You know, it doesn't have to be this thing that, oh, a woman's out there and she's, you know, pioneering in the field. That's actually the new norm. I mean, I love this topic too, Brandon. I think it was just this morning I read that the Prime Minister of New Zealand was reelected by a landslide. And I think that's the one thing that we've all learned from this experience is that women-led countries, women-led organizations are actually hugely successful. And I think leading from the front is part of that. It's very easy in the old modality of doing things of top-down dictation. And that's something that I know was important for me when I had my own company for 8 years, is I wanted everybody to know I would go downstairs and get anybody a coffee. If I was going downstairs, of course, I would never come back with just a coffee for me. I would want to know what everybody else wanted. And so I would love to know your thoughts, Julie. For you, when did you first realize that leading from the front was important? And how has that shown up throughout the trajectory of your career?
So I think that I realized how important it was probably when I really started in the CIO role at FireEye. So I had been in plenty of executive positions previously, but never had I been in an executive position for an organization or a discipline and function that I had never personally worked in or led before, right? So here I am coming in as the first CIO at FireEye. And, you know, there was a lot of questions about people saying, like, look, you know, she did not grow up in IT. How is she going to lead us through this, you know, transformation, going public, all these kind of things. And so I was certainly feeling like I had to probably work even harder leading from the front. And one example that stands to mind is we were doing a whole network refresh. And so it meant like working 24 hours straight, you know, because we had to do it when the business wouldn't be impacted. And we had, you know, I mean, this thing was a fine-tuned machine. This had to happen, that had to happen. And admittedly, there was very little I could do, but I was there from when we kicked off at 6 p.m. until we all left at 8 a.m. the next morning to be there for them, to do anything I could for them. If it was make a phone call or, hey, yeah, grab a cup of coffee, or you know what, you want me to go pick up Thai food? I'll go pick up Thai food. But to just be there showing them that, hey, look, I don't think this is your job. And then you let me know when it's done. This is our job. I'm here to support you. And I remember they actually had me send out the communication when we were all done. And the amount of feedback that I got from folks just being there, right? And admittedly, they were the brains, right? It just really resonated with me and made me realize that that is what people are looking for, right? They're not looking for somebody that's not willing to do what they are doing, even if they don't have the exact same skill set or discipline, but just to know that you're there to support them. And if it's successful, great. It was all them. If it's not so successful, you can point to me.
That was powerful what you said at the end there. That if it's not successful, you can point to me. And I think what's really powerful about that story too is you're already by your own admission, you're not the, at that time, I think you are now, at the time you weren't the foremost world expert in this specific area. So not only are you saying, if anything goes wrong, talk to me, you're knowing that there's a lot of things that were out of your control. So how do you immediately either give that amount of trust, or what gives you the fortitude to sort of put yourself on not the final, but to put yourself in front, if you will, and say, come through me first. What is that?
Yeah, and I think probably where I honed that skill is when I was doing it in, you know, sort of disciplines or in situations where I was a lot more confident that I knew, you know, sort of next layer down, you know, that we were all good to go. So I think I probably built that when I was in a more confident position, but I realized the more you step up in leadership, you've got to recognize that you are not going to be deep in everything. You're not going to be an expert in everything, and that you absolutely have to know what things do I absolutely have to go dig a few layers deeper on versus where is it that I'm just going to have to do a little bit of trusting. And hey, by asking the right questions and by making sure that I understand what the risks are, you can still learn a lot just through those conversations without necessarily needing to know whether it was this you know, Cisco switch or, you know, whatever, right? It was, it's really, hey, what's the risk to the business? What happens if it doesn't go right? What is our rollback plan, right? Like, I can ask a lot of other questions that are applicable in just about any scenario. Yeah, you got to trust, right? And it's got to be both ways.
Yeah.
And you talked about in the recent article you did, which I love. You talked about the intention of communication right now. Mm-hmm. That, and I love that you're not just saying, here, I'm going to tell you everything I know. You're saying, I'm going to ask the right questions. I'm going to be very, can you talk about what you mean by, in this sort of post-COVID times, why communication is so, it's so necessary to be so intentional in how we're communicating with one another?
Yeah. And again, I think I used to be, this used to come very natural in a more in-office physical world, right? So I think when what I used to take for granted in a lunchroom, in a, you know, hallway conversation, oh, I haven't seen you for a while, what's going on with this? Once we went 100% virtual, it was pretty clear that I needed to build those conversations into the workflow in some way because they didn't necessarily come naturally. Mm-hmm. So instead of, you know, typically starting a meeting with, hey, look, you know, hey, how is everybody? But, you know, here's the agenda. Here's what we're trying to do. Spending a lot more time on the, okay, we'll get to the work stuff, but, you know, I really need to understand how things are going, and whether that be in a one-on-one scenario or whether it be in a group setting. But, you know, I had to push myself a little bit more. I also had to take a step back from some things that I felt really strongly about pre-COVID. If somebody wasn't on video on a Zoom, I was sort of like nudging them, get on the video, right? We don't care about your hair. Like, we just want to see you. And I had to just let all that go once people were on video 24/7 and realize, you know what? A phone call's fine. Just call my cell phone, old fashioned technology. It's okay. Right. And like, so a lot of things that I would have sort of handled differently, I've completely had to pull back on because the, you know, the operating rhythm is so different now and people are looking for any chance to not be on video, right? Like just for a few minutes, right? So they can, you know, rest and we don't realize how much of a drain it is. So I guess I just had to think a lot more about, you know, what am I not doing because I don't have the physical opportunities to do it, as well as what did I used to, you know, because I can be a bit of a pain, right? Like, what did I used to kind of bug people about that now I just have to say, you know what, not even important, doesn't even matter. So just being aware.
Yeah, and I think one of the other important things when we're talking about this idea of communication and leading from the front that I know inspired me with the leaders that I've worked with throughout the years, male or female, is being accountable. I think that a leader who is accountable and that takes accountability, just like you were saying, whatever the thing that might be going wrong is, I think it's very easy to pass the buck and to say, oh, well, you know, this person was lead on this, so they were the one who really screwed it up. And I know what I learned in the years that I ran my company is to say, you know what? Doesn't matter. Whoever the front person was, at the end of the day, it's me, because my communication fell through. And however I communicated that to the person, there was clearly a missing in my communication that didn't land for the person. And so that's why one of the biggest things I found from leading from the front is how can we fine tune and finesse our communication? And I would even go so far as to say, what was missing? You know, I know XYZ didn't happen. I would love it if we could have more of this next time. And what was missing on my end that would have allowed you to have what you need? How could I have done that better? And I think that when we're leaders, that can be a really powerful way, because you're not just saying, oh, you're naughty, you didn't do it right. You know, you're saying, hey, mea culpa. Yeah. You know, it's on me. I understand at the end of the day, I'm the one who needed to be accountable for this. So can you share with us any stories? Because I feel like stories are so valuable for people to understand in the real world how and where this might show up.
Yeah, so I think, you know, I've had multiple large, you know, sort of really important critical initiatives or projects, right, that always come with a lot of risk, a lot of hair, you know, a lot of, you know, people involved and you know, trying to make sure that everything lines up perfectly. And, you know, I mean, a few things that I have tried to do with those teams is instill a few, you know, just sort of guiding principles for the way we operate as a team. And one of them is go ugly early. Right? Like don't hold back and don't sort of just, oh, maybe that won't happen. Or, but if there's anything, you can come to me and we will then come up with the mitigation plan, right? And so giving them the understanding that they don't ever have to worry about giving me bad news. I mean, some days I'm like, hey, some good news would be great, but you never have to worry about bringing me bad news because I'm going to have your back, but we're going to sit down and then go figure out. And then certainly not in the moment, but once, you know, things have stabilized a bit, then coming back and saying, all right, let's talk about what all of us could have done differently or better and really use it as that learning example and be very clear about what could I have done better? Like, what did I not understand in what you were trying to tell me? Or what did I not, you know, communicate properly to the stakeholders or whatever? So it's knowing when to have those conversations, right? Because sometimes it's not at that exact moment. You know, it's more like, hey, let me help you get to a place where you feel like we can get back on track and that you've got the air cover that you need. But remember to always go back and do that. And also be vulnerable with them, right? I mean, like, hey, if I've made a mistake, yeah, man, I'm going to let you know I made a mistake and I will own it and we'll figure it out. But so when they see that that's how you operate, then they're going to be a lot less fearful of bringing problems. Now, again, it's nice to have a problem with a little bit of an idea of, hey, but I have an idea of what we might do. But it's just giving them that comfort that no matter what, you're going to have their back. Now, that doesn't mean you don't have high expectations. It doesn't mean that you don't expect people to get it right as much as we can the first time. But in a scenario when we don't, that they don't have to worry or not tell, because that's when things get bad. Oh, didn't mention that. And then it's like this thing that just sort of the snowball gets bigger and bigger. And then it's pretty much, you know, very difficult, right, to now go and figure out how are we going to unravel this. So I still use it to this day, go ugly early. It's better to do that.
I never heard that. I love that go ugly early. That's great. That is a guiding principle, though, when I find that companies are indexing towards even being better cultures. That's the idea. I know a brilliant CEO who says all the time, I don't care if it's bad news or good news, I just need the news. And yeah, the only way you're going to let me down or upset me is if I don't get the news quickly.
Yeah.
And so just shifting the culture from only good news to I need all news has been monumental for the health.
That's a good way to put it too. I like that.
Yeah. It's so I find that I'm going to ask you something that I've noticed about you that I just think is such a Julie, that something I admire and appreciate about you. I was just emailing her a little bit today, like our mutual friend, Roxanne, or I've seen this with another friend of ours, Michelle, where you are such a weird example, but you are such a good friend. You are just such a good friend. You are such a champion. I mean, in this case of two amazing women I know, but you're such a great friend. Can you talk
about the importance of that? I'm nodding my head because I'm thinking of them, not me.
Yeah. Oh, good. No, I'm glad. And then for people who don't know them, we don't even name them by name necessarily other than last names, but they are amazing. But that's something I've noticed about you. The way you champion people, the way you advocate for them. Can you talk about the importance of being a good friend to certain individuals in business or as a leader?
Well, you know, I feel like in every one of my career, you know, sort of the various roles that I've had, companies I've worked for, et cetera, there's always a few women, and not that I don't have great relationships with a lot of my male colleagues or whatever, but there's always have seemed to be a few women that I just really connected with. And sometimes it was more of a peer relationship. Other times it was, hey, they happen to work for me. And I will say there's not a lot, but there are a handful of women that I have stayed in touch with multiple companies, multiple years, you know, celebrate milestones, all those kind of things. And I don't know what it is. I think some of it is a lot of same philosophies, right? In terms of leading. I'm also a big fan of people that get shit done, right? Like, you know, I mean, there's just certain things that I think I'm attracted to, right? And when I find those people, I feel like the connection, you know, just gets that much, much deeper. And I mean, like Roxanne's somebody like if a few days goes by and I haven't talked to her, it's like, oh my God, what's wrong? Something must be wrong with Roxanne, just because that's the type of connection. And Michelle, just now I was texting with her. And it's just because there's just a lot of similarities, and most of it's because of how they think about leading and how they take accountability. It's the same kind of core values, right? That, you know, I just really am attracted to. And so it's super easy to support them. And I find that across a ton of women that I've been able to network with, but it's a little different when you've had these intense working scenarios, right? That very quickly, I think bring people together and they realize, wow, you're somebody that I'm not going to, you know, I'm not just going to move on from this company and that's it. But again, I mean, I just had the opportunity to work with some really amazing people. I mean, Barbara, who you know, right? I mean, like just some absolute gems, right? That I can reach out to anytime I need something and they are there.
I love that you talked about values. I think that's so important in friends and companies, finding that value alignment. And I love that you talked about conflict or a time. You know, there was a good study that came out that showed what makes a great friend. And there's a reason we're so close to people we went to high school, college with. It's because friendship is, as we've been found to be, time spent with conflict added. Really think about it. Who was our friends and who are, that doesn't mean you go through conflict. It means you solve something together. Yeah. Or you supported one another together. Yeah. And I think it's really that support and the lifting up.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. No, I think
by nature of some of the roles that we've all been in, there's a level of intensity, right? Like this is not necessarily for everyone, right? And even though it may not be life and death intensity, right? It's like, whoa, man, we've got a major challenge ahead of us from a business headwinds or whatever it is. And those are really intense when you're in the situation and it feels like it's, you know, it's that, you know, sort of, you know, so deep, like if we don't get this right, like, you know, I mean, so that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. One of the things that I found that surprised me throughout my years is the people who we wind up becoming friends with, who you are afraid of, or that you think they hate your guts. I don't know if you guys have ever had that happen in business, where I was just thinking about that with somebody who's a dear friend of mine to this day. And I remember exactly where we were the first time we met. And I was frightened of her. She's Ivy League educated, so smart, top of her game in business. And you kind of, you're in the same room with a person like that. And at first, at least in my case, I was feeling like not good enough. I'm like, oh gosh, no, I can't rub elbows with this person. But what I love is that sometimes in business, the strategic relationships, the friendships you make come in the most unexpected ways when you're willing to push outside of your own comfort zone. You know, we see ourselves as one way and we see somebody else maybe as another way.
Yeah.
You know, and she and I were even talking about this. She's like, listen, education is just education. She said, I don't think I'm any different than anybody else just because I went to an Ivy League school and somebody else didn't. And it's interesting how I think as a leader, you have this opportunity to level the playing field. And you, at the one hand, you want to have the respect. That's, you want to lead from the front. You want to have the respect of your team. But on the flip side of it, you also want to be the person that people can trust to talk to you about what's going on. And for me, I was grateful that the team I led, they would always come and tell me, maybe once out of everybody I'd ever hired, they would tell me if they were ever considering leaving the company 5 months, 6 months, a year down the road. And I think that's such a valuable thing to be able to have that flow of trust, and mutual respect, because you're showing them, yes, I'm one of you. And we're also been at a job for 15 years and said, what do I do, Jen? Do I give, you know, 2 weeks notice? Do I tell the person, give them longer time? I'm worried they might be upset. And I think it's important just to develop that mutual understanding and respect over however many years it is that you might work together.
I remember you said so many important things in what you just talked about there. I have so many comments I want to make. One is about the, you know, the trust and people telling you, hey, look, you know, I'm starting to look around. And I think that really shows, you know, you as a leader, and you know, that you have looked at them as a human first and as a part of their team or somebody that gets important work done for you separate. And that's what it's all about. Like, I mean, this is a human coming and saying, hey, look, I might need to think about the commute's killing me or this is happening or whatever. And at least you have an opportunity to have a dialogue about, is there a way for me to make these things better for you? But you look at them as a person, not as, oh my God, who's going to get that work done if you're not here, right? And that's what I think the difference between true leadership is, right? So I think that what you said there is super important. Now, the funny thing about people you maybe either were intimidated by, or in some cases you were like, now, I'm not sure I like that person, right? Like, because when, you know, first meetings or whatever, and I go, Roxanne, she and I came together by virtue of an acquisition. The company I work for acquired Roxanne's company, and we had similar roles. And as this integration is happening, there's always that tough conversation about the people side of things. And the decision was, hey, Julie is going to continue to lead the following functions. But Roxanne, we think you're amazing. We'd love you to take on this role, but you will work for Julie. Mm. And she was not happy. She did not like me. She was like, I did not like you. I saw you in a meeting. Or I did not like you. She came and worked for me again at another company. She's one of my favorite humans in the world. But she's like, look, I didn't want to like you. I didn't want to work for you. I didn't want to like you. And you know what? When you give people a chance and when you start to you realize, oh, my God, I really like you. So it's just funny how you don't know. But I will say that whole, oh, gosh, I know there's a term for it. I'm totally blanking. But the whole intimidation thing, it happens to me all the time. I went to a dinner, social distance, masks, the whole thing. We were saying goodbye to a CIO that's leaving the Bay Area that's going off to do an amazing job. And we were having a little small get together to send her off. I'm sitting next to this woman who is just like, she's absolutely my idol. And she did a pivot a few years ago and got out of a full-time operating role. She's on multiple boards. She's advising. She's following her passion around mental health. And I'm just looking at her and the whole time, just like, I just want to be like you someday. And yet she is the most down-to-earth, like, I mean, the most lovely person in the whole world. And you start to realize, hey, you know, again, she's just another human, right? With kids and just had a grandchild. I mean, in the end, it's about life. We sort of get wrapped up in the whole work thing for sure, but.
I love that. That's one of the things I like to say is that when I got into this field, I thought, you know, because it was newer, not newer, but still not as defined as it is now. And I was like, oh, maybe I'll be a life coach. And then no one wanted to hire me. And then I finally realized I wanted to be an executive coach and make sure my executives have the best life possible.
Right.
Well, you know, that's what matters to me. It's life. It's career. Yeah. It's like me and Jennifer doing this. When we say get yourself the job, it's get yourself the career, get yourself the life you want. But we spend so much of our life in work that it's so important to work with people we like. Our friends, you know, there's some great studies that came out. They used to think that they didn't want people working people they like because we thought that we'd, no, turns out if you don't like the people you work with, you know, you do, you spend all day going, I hate that person, you know,
when
you
like them,
you go crush it together. You reminded me of Michelle DiBella, who was our very first guest we did when we sort of did this co-host thing, had this great conversation. It was about 20 of us around a big table. We had a former U.S. Olympic medalist for women's soccer team was there. And it was all this, it was really a kind of the who's who from different arenas. And she sat down and everyone who introduced himself had a really impressive bio. And she told a story. She was overseas and she was at this big event for kind of world leaders. And what they did was at the event, they assigned every leader like one mentee, younger or something like 18. And so whatever's going on, they're going from one event to the next event, and her and her mentee are in a limo together. And the mentee is being really quiet, not saying anything. And Michelle finally said, is that okay? Are you all right? And she goes, I've just never been in a car with someone so powerful. And Michelle says she looked around the car to see who else was in it because she was confused. And then she went, oh, you mean?
Yeah.
And she was so used to being in that room. And I love it because she tends to curse sometimes when she's telling a good story. And she goes, I realize I'm the shit. And it turns out, she says this the entire table, I know everyone at this table, you are the S. You are, that's why you're at this table. And the amount of times that I would host a dinner of powerful leaders from Silicon Valley and someone go, oh my God. I was like, you're at this table too. There's a reason. And we forget that. We forget that we're at that table for a reason too.
Yeah.
I love that story of just 120 powerful heads. And I'm going, oh yeah, I forgot about that. I'm so used to that comparison mindset. And that's something a great friend, a great leader can do, is remind you of your own power.
No, it is funny. And I think to your point, it's like, we are the shit, not I am, right?
Yes, like, right. Perfect. That's beautifully said.
Yeah. To your point too, about the person saying, oh my God, I've been here 15 years and what do I do or whatever. It's like every once in a while, I just remind myself and whomever I'm talking to, it's just a job.
That's it.
At the end of the day, it's just a job. And if they had to turn around and come to you and say, hey, I'm sorry, things have changed, the business is going a different direction or whatever, they would not necessarily be belaboring over this nearly as much as you are on their behalf. And that it goes back to this, you know, sort of life balance and what defines you and all these kind of things. The whole live to work, work to live kind of thing, right? It's like, you got to flip it. So.
Yeah. And I think a good friend at work can make sure you do. You know, talking about that, and a great leader or can definitely make sure we do. And me and Jennifer talked about this last week, the difference between kindness as a strength, but differentiating that between being nice. Nice is, I'm going to keep you on the job, you're okay. Kindness is, I have to let you go because you are so desperately unhappy. Yeah. And unfortunately, you're making other people unhappy, but I can't watch you being this much pain anymore.
Yeah.
And so I think that's
true.
Jennifer, does that resonate for you from a kindness perspective too, that idea of what we're talking about?
It's, you know, being a leader, people think that you're on this pedestal and that you automatically have all the right answers. And the truth of the matter is, for any of you out there tuning in, whoever the leaders are in your organization, they lose sleep over it at night wondering, did I make the right decision? And all we can do is make the best decisions with the best information possible. And that's why I love the example of COVID and the leaders around the world and how they've been responding. Yeah. You know, some people could arguably point the finger and say, they didn't do it right. This person did it better. No, every single country and every leader in every country was doing the best darn job that they could with the information they had. And that's all any of us can expect. And I think when we empathize with our leaders without pointing the fingers and blaming them, I think that's something about being a leader at the front, is that you actually receive the empathy and respect, the mutual respect from all of your people that you're collaborating with, because they know that you're a human being. Yes, you do make tough choices. And at the same time, they might even come to you. I think that one of the most valuable things for me as a leader is I would give my own team the opportunity to give me feedback in their review. We would go through their review and I'd say, you know, hey, how could I have done this year better? How could I have done this year in a way that would have empowered you or your teammates? Or what are the things that nobody really talks about? And it's funny, one of my favorite guests I've ever had on the show is Dr. Paul White, author of Appreciation at Work, and it's a whole philosophy. And I think one of the reasons, no matter whether you're the person leading out in front or if you're the person who's running the show behind the scenes, appreciation is critical, and especially now more than ever. So take the time, guys. If you have a great boss, whoever he or she is, and they're putting their neck on the line, appreciate them. And to all of the incredible leaders out there, my favorite thing to do when I would hire a new employee, and I learned this from Dr. White, is I would literally ask every single employee, how do you most receive and best receive appreciation? If you had it all your way, would you like one-on-one time with me? Do you like Starbucks gift cards? Would you like words of affirmation? And I remember one gentleman I worked with who was up in our San Francisco office. He said, Jennifer, you know, I appreciate being appreciated, but please don't ever do it publicly. What would mean the best thing in the world to me would be for you to call me or email me privately and say, great job. I really love that you did X. But he said, if you do it in public, I feel shame and guilt and it's uncomfortable. And if we don't have these tough conversations as leaders to find out what has our team feel respected and empowered, what has them feel uncomfortable, that's where you're going to get the disharmony and people leaving jobs unexpectedly.
Yeah, you got to get to know your people. You know, you really do. And I mean, it's amazing how far a simple thank you can go. It's amazing.
Julie, what's something you've led a lot of people in your career? What is something that people have done for you to make you feel appreciated? Ooh. And what has that done to ensure that you look out for them in the future?
Well, I think most of it's been sort of public recognition of my leadership, right? Not like, you know, I mean, like, so even just last week, somebody that, you know, on my current team posted something about, you know, your leadership and, you know, you trust us. So, you know, we can do our best or whatever. And it's like, it's having that people recognize me. And again, not about that I was smart about security or I knew this, but that it was about my leadership and my leadership style and approach and developing them, and that, you know, they look to me as a leader. Because I will tell you, I've worked for lots of different people, and I would say a lot of times you learn what you don't want to be as a leader necessarily than what you do want to be as a leader. When you, you know, work with certain people, you're like, hey, this is all a great lesson, but I want to be a different sort of leader. And so if somebody says to me, hey, look, I thought you were a great leader. I really appreciate what you did in leading the team. And I want to be a leader like you. I think that's just, I mean, to me, that's like, okay, then I left some sort of, you know, some sort of goodness behind me. Because I really think a lot of what I do, anyone could do. But I think what makes people different is, you know, just sort of the how do they lead? And how important do they realize leadership is? And what are they doing to develop other leaders?
Yeah, I'm not going to let you get away if everyone can do what you do. I watched you work magic and I've seen it firsthand. One more question that we're actually going to let you go is one question I have, and Jennifer might have another one, but the switch from chief information to adding in the chief people officer, you mentioned the word lesson. What's the greatest lesson you learned in that switch in 2018, taking on that role as well?
Well, I mean, the responsibility for an entire set of employees versus normally I felt, you know, real deep responsibility for my teams. And it doesn't mean I didn't care about all employees, but I didn't have like sort of that direct or didn't feel the pressure and responsibility of really being responsible for every employee in the company everywhere in the world. So I thought it, you know, I had a real appreciation. It really changed my outlook on how you really, and again, how diverse our company is and the challenges and what people were facing and all those sort of things. So it was just really eye-opening to me. But again, it's a perfect example of leading from the front, right? Like I would not have ever, you know, raised my hand and said, hey, I want to be the chief people officer, because I would have said, hey, look, that's not what I do. But as we were going through a transition and they were looking for somebody, all of a sudden it was like, well, what about that one that keeps, you know, talking about this, you know, employee engagement stuff and is interested in driving values and culture? Like, what about that one that keeps piping in? And I feel super blessed that I had the opportunity to take on the role. And trust me, I have learned a ton. And again, I had to hire a couple of key folks onto the team that really could make up for certain gaps that I had in order to make it work. So I know it's just been a fantastic experience.
I think that's brilliant, Julie. And one thing that came to mind that I think might be a powerful way to close this out is the self-reflection piece that you said. You said that you have this team and you could see that there were gaps. If somebody's out there and they're like, you know what, I'm really good at this, but maybe on X or Y, I'm not as strong. How do you begin to identify that? And then how do you begin to fill those holes? What's your preferred way? Do you call upon the people that you know? What's your way that you create the super team, you know,
people you trust? So I think some of it's like, you know, in the case of the people team, it was definitely some quote unquote technical gaps, like people that are really good at driving these types of people related programs. But where I think the biggest investment and what I have found to be most valuable and have the best ROI is really focusing on the soft skills gaps that you need to be looking at when you have a team, right? So it's one thing to say, hey, I need somebody that's really good at XYZ. But what's more important is I need somebody that's going to fit in and complement the strengths and weaknesses that we have across my leadership team, as an example. So, you know, the self-awareness is really, you know, I spend a lot of time getting my folks on the same page as far as who are you, DISC profile, you know, personality types, all those types of things, right? To be able to figure out how we're going to be an effective team, right? Because even if you hire the best at each thing, if they're not a team and if they don't respect, trust, and hold each other accountable, it's not going to get you where you want to go. So I feel like a lot of times I'm really looking more on the competency side as to what are the gaps and what would complement me. Like, hey, I'm super high energy, hard driver on this stuff. Maybe I need somebody that's really good at that, but also has a different approach for how they engage and get buy-in and it maybe are a little more compromising in certain areas or whatever. So I think that that's where I try to spend a lot more time trying to understand what are the gaps and the complementary areas that we need to be thinking about to build out the effective team. And I think you can never do enough of that. People always want to say there's not time for it, but you will waste a lot more time by not doing it.
And one thing you mentioned about your, you mentioned passion and how you got the role. I love too. You mentioned this beautiful point of what you did once you got the role and filling in those gaps. I loved how you mentioned that you were thought of, that you, you shared your passion. You didn't stop talking about things outside your direct scope. And I think so many of us stay in our lane, and we never, maybe we limit ourselves unintentionally by thinking we are green this lane, but really it's whatever you're passionate about, whatever value, we have more value to add.
Yep.
And whatever our job function is. And I think you did a beautiful example of why it's so important to share your ideas and your vision and your where it comes from.
Yep. Yep. No, and I have not stayed in my lane all that well.
What's that?
I have not stayed in that, in my lane very well over my
career. I love it. I would never want you to. I think it's amazing. And I think that's a, actually maybe a nice place to wrap, because it's Julie, you asked, you know, yes, there's a lot of people, I have a laundry list of people I want on this show. There was, you were always going to be one of the first, and you have to know this title. When I, we were emailing this today, it was, there's not a more perfect show than Leading from the Front. And for me, I, this was early on. And then I did a training sort of, so I, you know, I did a training, you're maybe the 20th one I'd ever done. And I did one where it was probably the 200th. And this, but it was exactly the same. And it was because you, the first time you're saying with Roxanne, I think the second time you're saying with Michelle, but in both situations, it was just you two at the front of the room.
Yep.
And it was more than that, though. It was the way you engaged. It's the way you set the tone of asking a question or engaging, or actually a lot of times you would point someone like, oh, this person, ask this person. The difference between, and I really hope anyone is listening, if they're ever in a facilitation and you are the leader in a room, take a note from Julie, sit in the front, engage, because I'll tell you, it's not just the presenter. It's what that sends to the message to the rest of the room is, this matters. This matters to me, and it's going to matter to you, and I'm here with you. The worst trainings I've ever done was the leader didn't show up, and no one knew where they were there. I've never been in a room where everyone doesn't know why they're there and doesn't know how seriously Julie is taking them. And I just, that means the world to me. You do lead by example.
Well, you do a great job. Show me.
It's awesome. And I just appreciate it so much.
Fantastic sessions. And I also feel like I want them to see that I'm too struggling with who am I and how do I brand myself. It's not you that can't figure that out. It's all of us. We're always constantly struggling with who really, and what's my value, superpower. It's hard work.
It is hard work.
All right. I'm going to take up too much of your time. You better let me go.
This is amazing. Thank
this
you
was amazing.
For joining us. Thank Julie Cullivan here with us today on Yourself.
Pleasure. Take care. Stay safe.
Thank you, Julie.
Bye-bye.
Bye. We're actually almost at time. Normally we get ourselves up 10 minutes buffer. I have my three or four takeaways. You want me to do that, or is there?
Yeah, let's hop right into it before they cut
I loved, us, go, pull us go, off go. Stage. What's that?
I said before they cut us off and pull us off stage.
Yeah, you're right. Go ugly early. How great is that? That just means says a hard thing, say it fast. If you're a leader, establish trust. If you're an employee, don't wait. You might get dinged. But you're going to get dinged a lot harder if you don't go ugly early or give the information that's hard to know, that's hard to say quicker. Be vulnerable with people if you want them to be vulnerable with you. Be a good friend, especially people who get stuff done. And we are the shit. And I got to say, if you're in a situation where you're trying to be the best version of yourself, you are. Your version, you're the best version of yourself that you can exist today. Back to your point, Jennifer. We're all doing the best we can. But a leader is not someone who oversees 100 people, a leader, or someone who oversees just themselves, or 1,000 people. The common denominator is growth mindset. So thank you as always for being in growth with me, my friend.
Well, thank you, my friend. And thank you to everybody who tuned in with us today. In future episodes, I know that there was a glitch with Facebook today, but we want to do what Brandon and I would love to do, especially when we have guests on, and even when it's just the two of us in the in-between weeks, is we would love to hear from you, and I'll be monitoring Facebook for comments. So if you have any comments as we're going throughout these future shows, so long as Facebook is looking, we'll be happy to interact with you. You can certainly leave us comments too on iTunes or on Get Yourself the Job Facebook page, or you can email us at getyourselfthejob@gmail.com. But the idea is we would love to hear from you. We would love to know what the burning questions that you have are for our guests, for the episodes that we have, or ideas that you might have on what you would like to hear more about. So please do look forward to that in future weeks and look forward to interacting with everybody out there. And thank you so much, Brandon, for just opening up your heart, your Rolodex to these wonderful, incredible guests. I mean, one is just better than the next. And I love our in-between conversations too, where we build on it, because There's so many facets to having a fulfilled life, which is what this show is really all about. And I'm so deeply grateful to be able to partner with you on this and to be able to partner with our listeners and viewers out there who tune in with us week in, week out. So thank you to everybody. And we're deeply grateful to have you here with us every week. So wishing you all safe, happy, healthy rest of your week. Happy job hunting. And thanks for tuning in.
Listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill and Brandon Maslin, only on LA Talk Radio.